21st Century Radio is sponsored by Hieronymus & Company. Now more of 21st Century Radio with your host, Dr. Bob Hieronymus.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These are the fundamental truths upon which our nation was founded, and they are illustrated by the new exhibit at the world-renowned American Visionary Arts Museum on Key Highway in Baltimore. Dare I say it, it's their best ever. Get over there the next free weekend you have and take all of your out-of-town visitors to AVAM to show it off. While there, do me a favor and stop by their incredible gift shop called Sideshow and buy one of my books that are on special sale at Sideshow in honor of their Life, Liberty, and Pursuit of Happiness exhibit. Call 443-872-4926. That's 443-872-4926 or on the web at avam.org.
I'm on a mission for the King. He told me to smile, and he told me to sing, and I can't
Welcome back to 21st Century Radio. This is Dr. Bob Hieronymus, and our executive producer, research assistant is Laura Corden. Our engineer is Jake Bryant. And once again, let me thank those at the Wind-Up Gallery and those who attended last night. That was just an extraordinary event that many of us are going to long remember. And our guest for the rest of this hour as well is Dan First. The book is Dance of the Moon, Celebrating the Sacred Cycles of the Earth. It's published by Llewellyn. You can contact them at 1-800-THE-MOON. And you can order this book from the link on the front page of 21stCenturyRadio.com or by calling 1-800-THE-MOON. You can visit Dan's website, Hermes Numerical 3. HermesNumerical3.net. No, you don't write out numerical. You It's a number three, all right, which is also linked at the front page, the 21stCenturyRadio.com. And, of course, Dan is going to be in Baltimore at the Breathe Books on November 21st at 1 p.m. on Sunday, the 22nd at 12 p.m. Breathe Books is on the Avenue in Hamden. Say hello to Susan Weiss and Larry Bolin while there. It was great to see them last night at our event about lost symbolism. And of course, he's also going to be, there are other places where you can go visit him. As a matter of fact, I think I got this one almost right. He has two regional events this Wednesday and Thursday, November the 18th and 19th in Frederick, Maryland at 10,000 Joys. And also call, well, you can call them at 301-631-JOYS, J-O-Y-S. And for more information, you can call them, but in Alexandria, my favorite, Virginia's my favorite state, it really is, but in Alexandria, that's a great one, all right, in Alexandria, Tuesday on the 24th at the Sacred Circle Books, call 703-299-9309. Now, Dan, oh, you discussed lunar time a little bit back there, and I want to touch on the number 13, which, you see, in my work, in my research, and I've been doing a lot of shows around the country on this, and it deals with, I bump into many fundamentalists who basically say the number 13 is a satanic number, that is a dark number, which is obviously an error. But could you relate, before we get into solar time and compare it to lunar time, could you relate the importance of the number 13 to the wise women that kept time?
Yeah,
back there in the old days,
it's no wonder that these people who are voicing these criticisms do that. You see, because they are unfortunately afflicted with devil mind, and you know what can we do but voice our best prayers and intentions that they will be relieved somehow of this painful and unnecessary condition to be preoccupied with devils. When in fact, I think the one who articulated the best was Gandhi, who said the only devils in the world are the ones that are running around in our own hearts. I would like to you know, I promised to get back to this and follow the thread of this, but I would like to acknowledge Laura Kortner, your executive producer and your administrative assistant, you see, because this, to me, what Laura does and the kind of energy that she represents is really so important to the phase that we are going into and the way that we are beginning to work more effectively and smoothly and communally with each other, that with what we are doing now tonight, Bob, talking to us, this is the product of really months of work that Laura has done to coordinate this and make this possible and bring us together. And thank God for the role that she has played that enables us to talk to each other like this. Laura is like one of those Capricorn characters who build the set at the theater, and they are in the workshop. They dismantle it. They set it up on stage. They construct it perfectly, and then they disappear, and they are nowhere to be seen during the show so that people like me can come out on stage and say, look at me. God bless people like Laura. So I just want to acknowledge her and her tireless and effective role in what she has done.
Well, listen, anyone that can work under me has got to be that way. Being a Virgo, indeed. You know, she is a Capricorn. And she did exactly what you said.
See, I didn't even know that.
Yeah,
you know,
she did exactly as you said.
Has that quality of operating in that kind of selfless, mm-hmm. disciplined
right.
service that people do when they take on the job, the unglamorous jobs that that no one else does, and they just do them beautifully out of a spirit of love. So that is really what is mainly involved here. You know, in this difference between whether we are going to live in, let's say, earth-friendly, endlessly renewing, circular lunar time, or whether we are going to live instead in a kind of time that is more relentlessly linear, which is fixated endlessly on results and outcomes and deadlines. No wonder they're called deadlines, because we practically kill ourselves in trying to meet them. And you see the whole difference, or one of the important differences, really, that deserves to be highlighted between lunar and solar time, is that in lunar time there really is no history. There is no concept of ages of time extending for thousands of years back into our past. It is only with the invention of the solar calendar that you really have the invention of history. And you have people like the civilization of India, of China, of the civilization of the Babylonians and the Jews, imagining that the starting point of their civilization was thousands and thousands and thousands of years ahead of our present time. The ancient wise women living in lunar time never thought in such terms, and nor did they think in terms of projecting time far into the future to some kind of Armageddon or ending date, by which time there's going to be a conclusion, there's going to be a battle, there's going to be a judgment, there's going to be some other thing that finishes the earth in fire and ruin. They never thought in those terms. And so naturally, as we are becoming more concerned now for the health of our planet, we are beginning to look more into the possibilities again of lunar time. And we are living in community with each other. I mean, how 20 years ago, Bob, how many of us even used the term building community? But now we hear it every day, because this is something that is so vital to us, especially at this time when these moribund, corrupt structures of economy and politics and consumer culture that people are living in are in the process of collapsing. The house of cards is coming down, and we are having to come to the point now of working together and visioning together to build what we are going to have to replace what is already crumbling and away and unsustainable. So this is why living by the moon is so important, you see, because it's not mental, it's not intellectual and factual. It is imaginative and it is intentional. This is why the lunar cycle is so crucially important to understand it, that you have really three critical points. One is the point of the dark moon. That is the time during the lunar cycle when the moon is not visible at all, and which, in fact, interestingly enough, Bob, is happening tonight. We are in a dark moon tonight as we are speaking. The dark moon is the time when we are most psychically receptive to visions, to understanding, to meditation. And this is naturally the time when individually and collectively more and more of us are beginning to join together to imagine and to vision the kind of planet that we want and that we intend to live in. The next phase that comes after that comes very soon. This is the new moon. And this is the moment when the first crescent moon appears, which represents the moment of the new beginning. So this is naturally the time when we launch new enterprises. So naturally a person who lives by the moon the way that I do, on November 16th and 17th, as soon as the new moon appears, this is when I'm going to be making my next pitches to bookstores that I want to do events at during my tour. This is when I launch other initiatives to bring other things into being. And then 2 weeks after that, at the full moon, this is the time when we bring things to completion. And so the moon herself offers a simple, natural, easy way of leading our lives and aligning very simply with the way that the moon herself operates, knowing when to vision and intend and imagine, knowing when to begin and launch, knowing when to take the thing to completion, and then, after the full moon, knowing when to wrap up the pieces and get ready for the next cycle. It's wonderfully simple, and more people are beginning to operate within it again.
How is that number 13 linked to the cycles of the moon?
Yes, Bob, I'm sorry, yes. Now, the 13, you see, if you multiply the number 13 by the number 28, which is the number of days in which the moon is fully visible during her cycle, you get a total of 364 days, to which you can add only one day to make a complete solar year, you see. And so in the understanding of the ancient wise women, there were not 12 parts to the year, there were potentially 13 parts to the year, 13 being the feminine number, whereas 12 being the more regular and easily manipulable number for mathematical purposes, was the number that was favored for solar masculine timekeeping. In the original zodiac, you see, the way that the ancient people understood it, there were not 12 zodiac signs, there were 13. And the number 13 was, in fact, the sacred feminine number, representing the number of signs in the zodiac and the number of lunar cycles within the year. It was only later when, especially Julius Caesar was the one who did this, who imposed what is called the Julian calendar, that the calendar was reduced instead to a set of 12 months having this irregular assortment of days that were, of months that were 30 or 31 days long, except for February, which was either 28 or 29. So the whole system was completely arbitrary. The 13-month system of the ancient wise women made perfect sense, but naturally when it became time to masculinize timekeeping and to eliminate the feminine element from it, then 13 became demonized as an unholy and irregular number. And this is why we have such popular belief as Friday the 13th being unlucky, as 13 being associated with the 13 being the death card in the tarot, the number itself being somehow made unholy, whereas in fact in the original matriarchal religions, 13 was the sacred number and nobody had ever heard of 12. But this switch from one to the other represents the difference between a lunar timekeeping system based on cycles of the number 13, and for that matter, as you and many of your readers know, 13 is a sacred number in the Mayan timekeeping system as well. You see that the basic sacred calendar called the Dzogchen has 13 cycles of 20 days each. So 13 has been well understood, not only in the ancient feminine matriarchal cultures, especially of Europe, as a sacred number, but understood that well by the Maya as well. And so very, very largely, the transition from the sacredness of the number 13 to the unholiness of the number 13 is also part of the entire process of fearing and demonizing the feminine.
Yes, indeed.
Of turning the feminine energy into unholy heathen energy, and really denigrating the incredible knowledge of witches. I mean, the word itself, witch, means knowledge. The knowledge of herbs and stones and stars and the property of water and animals and so on. Denigrating this entire body of knowledge as though it is somehow satanic and evil because it is connected with the earth. We are beginning to understand now, again, that the thing that is sacred is not the dogmas and the holy books and the churches. The thing that is sacred, for heaven's sake, is the earth herself.
Absolutely.
And the wise women were right all along.
They certainly were. Thank you for that. Now, we're going to take our first break of this hour. And when we return, let's talk about how we can best live by the moon. And then later on, talk a little bit about that span of 14 months from April 2009 through May 2010 as a window for our collective visioning of the challenges and opportunities that are coming for the summer of 2010. And, of course, we got to talk about 2012. We touched a little bit on that a lot last hour, but I think I'd like to refocus on that with our guest Dan First, Dance of the Moon, celebrating the sacred cycles of the earth, published by Llewellyn. You can order it from the link on the front page of 21stcenturyradio.com or by calling 1-800-THE-MOON. If you're a business owner or executive seeking growth yet determined to cut wasteful costs, consider outsourcing your whole marketing department to The Selling Well. The Selling Well offers businesses truly superior marketing services without all the overhead costs associated with employing a full-time marketing executive. Learn more online at thesellingwell.com. That's thesellingwell.com, named after one of our greatest symbols of prosperity, the well. Visit thesellingwell.com or call The Selling Well's managing partner, Plato Hieronymus, at 443-939-1890. TheSellingWell.com. Researchers at Johns Hopkins are seeking volunteers with a diagnosis of cancer to participate in a scientific study of self-exploration brought about by psilocybin. Psilocybin is a psychoactive substance found naturally in mushrooms, which has been used for centuries as a sacrament for religious and spiritual purposes. Volunteers will be given careful preparation before receiving the psilocybin in a comfortable, supportive setting. Structured guidance both during and after the session will facilitate integration. This study complies with all FDA regulations. Please call 410-550-5990 or visit cancer-insight.org. Confidentiality will be maintained. That's 410-550-5990 or www.cancer-insight.org.
I'm Dr. Roger Lear, author of The Aliens and the Scalpel. We welcome you all to Dr. Bob Hieronymus at 21st Century Radio.
Well, welcome back to 21st Century Radio, and thank you, Dr. Roger Lear. Well, our guest is Dan First, Dance of the Moon, Celebrating the Sacred Cycles of the Earth, published by Llewellyn, and you can order that from the link on the front page at 21stcenturyradio.com or by calling 1-800-THE-MOON. And, as a matter of fact, you can meet Dan in person in Baltimore this Saturday, November the 21st at 1 p.m. and Sunday the 22nd at 12 p.m. at Breathe Books on the Avenue in Hamden. And please, again, say hello to Susan Weiss and Larry Bolin while there. It was so great to see them just last night at our event on Lost Symbolism at the Wind-Up Space. So you can go to Breathe Books this weekend. Also, he is going to be at two other regional events this Wednesday, Thursday, November the 18th and 19th in Frederick, Maryland at 10,000 Joys. Call 301-631-JOYS for more information. And in Alexandria on Tuesday, the 24th of November at the Sacred Circle Books. Call 703-299-9309. Now, how can we best live by the moon?
Well, I think the best ways to live by the moon, Bob, there are basically two things that are very important here. One is the power of our own intentionality and becoming more skilled in the practice of intentions that we set both individually and that we set collectively. And the other is by evoking and awakening again the power of our sound, because chanting and singing, the resonating of sound within our bodies, was absolutely essential to the life, to living by the moon the way that the ancient peoples practiced it. We have all heard the expression singing down the moon, meaning that in effect by singing individually and especially by singing communally, we are bringing the lunar energy of receptivity, imagination, intuition down from the heaven onto the earth so that it is practiced among us all in an empowered way that we use to create the kind of communities and the kinds of planet that we intend to have. And this is really the practical art of intention and of manifestation as we are learning to use it now, as we begin to understand it more skillfully, and as we also begin to understand that we basically have two views of the planet right now. One is that life is pretty much the way it is, human nature is very much the way it is, and there's not much that you can ever do to intend it or to change it, so we pretty much have to accept it as it is. The other way of the other view is far, far more dynamic, stressing the power of our individual intentions to create what we want for ourselves. And if we acknowledge that our individual intentions are tremendously powerful, then we can imagine what the effect of our collective intentions, held and used together by thousands, millions of people, what kind of transformative effect that could have on bringing about the kind of society and the kind of planet we want. In practical terms, it is necessary to understand that when we are working with the art of intention, we are not working with some superficial thing like the book The Secret, which is only a kind of manifestation for materialists telling people the false idea that you're going to get the car and the boat and the house and all of these other things that you want simply by wishing for them. Intentions have prices. Something must be given for the gaining of the intention, because one of the universal laws that we operate under is that exchanges of energy are necessary. If we want to get something, we are going to give something for it. and it is not usually going to be in the form of some kind of material price that we pay. It is instead going to be in the form of some kind of inner transformation that we make in order to adjust the alchemy of our own inner energy for the purpose of attracting what we want. I've got a really interesting story of what happened when I was in Argentina a few months ago, working with people down there who define themselves as an intentional community. That is, they are a community of people holding and working with the same intentions. I was down there to do a process for a week of doing a lot of crystal singing bowl ceremonies and other sound ceremonies there in Capilla del Monte, Argentina. And as often happens with these things, as many of us know, if you are undergoing these deep transformational processes, physical emergencies occur. And, you know, your body may go into shutdown in one way or the other. I practically went into a respiratory shutdown so that on the morning of one day I was singing powerfully in this incredibly acoustically brilliant chapel that was there. And by the morning of the next day, I could hardly breathe. And an EMS unit came from the hospital to take care of me. And I was amazed to find out, among other things, that the price that I had to pay for this treatment to open my breathing up again was absolutely nothing, not one centavo. But the thing that was amazing, Bob, was that after the treatment, when I went outside the hotel, I went to the herbal store nearby to get some herbal medicines that are good for opening up your lungs. And the man behind the counter, whom I had never seen before, said, "How is your breathing?" And the same thing happened as I was going down the street. There were other people coming up who were not really members of the sacred sound community. These are people from the town who had been present at these different sort of the crystal bowl events that we had done in public, are all coming up to me and saying, "Are you better now? How are you doing? ¿Cómo es su respiración?" Now, how in the world could this happen? I mean, did all these people in Capilla del Monte get up before dawn and call everybody else and tell them about Dan's condition? Not at all. What happened here was that when intentional communities are working together in a really powerful way, there's a kind of telepathy that occurs so that when someone is in need of help, the intention and the word about it goes out instantly to everyone. It was utterly astonishing to experience this and to see this is where we are headed as human beings. This is part of the Aquarian cohesion that we are doing with each other, so that instead of endlessly stopping and debating and negotiating with each other, we are capable of acting like a flock of birds. We notice how they fly, and they all turn in one direction at the same time. Do they stop and make a plan? Do they debate different kinds of courses of action? No, they have a collective mind that enables them all to turn as one. So this is very much what living by the moon is, very much entails, that we are giving up a lot of these intellectual disputes and disagreements to the effect that I am right and you are wrong and we must do it my way and so on, and we are just aligning ourselves with a collective intention that works instantly among all the people who are concerned.
Now, I understand your next book is going to be, is it going to be on sound?
Well,
sacred sound?
I've got two other books in the mill. One is completed. It's a book called Surfing Aquarius, and that book is done, though it needs revision, and that's about how the age of Aquarius that we are entering now is affecting us all and the many ways in which our lives are being transformed by it already, and how to align ourselves to ace the wave of change in order to live with this harmoniously. The other book, Bob, is about the sound science and the sacred music of the ancient Egyptians, and this is the product of the period of time that I spent for 5 years in Egypt, during which I got to meet you for the first time, in which I was going up and down the Nile Valley and also to Sinai and other places in Egypt to research the sound resonant properties of the ancient Egyptian sacred sites. I mean, as we both know, these things are very much misunderstood by conventional Egyptology and by other kinds of limited thinking, and are not really well understood yet in terms of their function as incredible energetic resonant spaces, which is what they really were. Mm-hmm. So that's what that book is largely about. I'll be talking about these various sacred sites that I have visited, that I've studied, that I've got to sing in, and we'll be doing some recording as well as a companion piece to the book itself.
I believe when we talked a few years ago about this particular important book dealing with the possibility of that the Great Pyramids chambers, various chambers, had some knowledge of the science of sound. Is that correct? Am I thinking correctly?
Oh, very, very much so. I mean, I have, you see, there's the, I mean, and you know, and you may, for all I know, you may have had on 21st Century Radio and interviewed people like Christopher Dunn, who wrote the
of
book,
course.
The Giza Power Plant,
mm-hmm.
which is very much based on the idea that the Great Pyramid itself is in fact a kind of power station that was designed to convert the hydraulic energy of the Nile River flowing under the pyramid, which it did at that time before the river shifted its course well to the east where it is now, and bringing the energy up through these rooms that were not a queen's chamber and a king's chamber. They were very specifically registered for the purpose of amplifying energy and in fact projecting it outward, so that these things that are regarded as air shafts that have often been called that are in fact no such thing. They are in fact shafts that were designed for the projecting of sound out through the stone core of the pyramid. And you know, if you look at the structure of what is called the King's Chamber, you notice that there are all these spaces above the room itself that are very mysterious in nature, that are often called relieving chambers, as though somehow their function is to distribute the weight of this massive amount of stone in the pyramid above them. But they have no such function. Architectural engineers understand this very well. They are not built for that purpose. They are in fact resonating chambers, which have the effect of, let's say, the comparison that occurs to me naturally is the one of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir or the theater that Richard Wagner created at Bayreuth for the purpose of taking sound, moving it up into the top of a cone structure, and then sending it back down into the space in which people are receiving the sound. The King's Chamber worked in very much the same way. There's a specific chant, in fact, that I have sung in there, which is obviously suited to that place, because the last syllable and the tone and the vowel itself cause the chamber itself to resonate and to vibrate very strongly. And we also know, you know, Bob, that the thing that is inside the King's Chamber that is supposed to be, it's called a sarcophagus, as though anyone was ever buried there. It never happened. There has never been any evidence that anyone was buried in this place. But if you tap that box with a mallet, it sounds a perfect classical concert A. That is 443 hertz. The box itself is a musical instrument, and experiments have been done, you see, with covering that box with a membrane that is then covered with very, very fine sand, and tapping the box in such a way that it produces these cymatic patterns on the surface of the membrane. So the like many of the other great ceremonial spaces in Egypt, that king's chamber is very definitely a sound space. I mean, all you have to do is go in there and sing there, and it is obvious to you what it was really for, though it's hard to do that now. It's happened several times, or it did when I was in Egypt, that I would go in there and be singing in that room, and some poor guy would have to run all the way up the grand gallery, waving his arms, puffing his way into the room, saying, "No meditation, no meditation."
Yeah, I think, as you may be aware of what happened a long, long time ago with Patrick Flanagan,
yes,
destroyed our ability. I mean, when I was there and spending time in the coffer, that was one of the problems. You almost have to bakshish them to death in order to remain. You know, you make a deal and say, okay, leave me in here for £100 for a half an hour, and they come back in 15 minutes and it's another £100. Well, you know.
Well, if you're lucky. I mean, you were there,
lucky,
Bob, at the time when that was possible.
Yeah, we were also there under the auspices of President Anwar el Sadat.
Uh-huh.
And so that kind of overruled just about everybody. And, you know,
you were a lucky man, Bob. You were there at the right time.
Well, you could never do what we did then. And, you know, like when we were allowed to spend time in King Tutankhamun's chamber when they had closed it off for years, we were there alone. The guides left. We spent hours there. And there are interesting energies within all of these particular chambers. But we got to take our final break of the hour. And when we return, let's take a look at the time period of the new moons from April the 2009 through May 10th. Okay?
Bingo.
All right. We'll be back with our guest, Dan First. The book is Dance of the Moon, Celebrating the Sacred Cycles of the Earth. Published by Llewellyn, that's 1-800-THE-MOON, or you can order it from the link on the front page of 21stCenturyRadio.com or by calling 1-800-THE-MOON.
Riches and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Next week on 21st Century Radio, it's time to think about what happens after you die. The survival of consciousness after death is explored in a new film called Infinity, The Ultimate Trip, and we'll review it and other subjects. Sunday night at 8, 21st Century Radio, Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Have you bought a copy of Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol yet? It's a must-read for all listeners to 21st Century Radio. Not only does the plot involve all the latest discoveries and consciousness research we've been reporting on for the past 21 years, but, of course, it also relies heavily on the research in my two most recent books, Founding Fathers, Secret Societies, and The United Symbolism of America. As a matter of fact, right now, my book is being displayed right next to Dan Brown's The Lost Symbol in all Barnes & Noble and Borders across the country. They are selling so well that we are going into new printings. Please support your local bookstores and go buy your copies of my books and Dan Brown's new blockbuster from the brick and mortar stores.
Hello, this is Robert Bavall. I'm the author of The Orion Mystery and Message of the Space. And you're listening to 21st Century Radio with Dr. Bob Hieronymus as your host. May the quest go on.
Well, that quest is still going on, Robert. Students at Johns Hopkins are hosting an integrative medicine symposium to facilitate the appreciation of the body's potential to establish balance and equilibrium. They are inviting speakers to share skills and practices that can be implemented to maintain optimum health. The speakers will cover territory on simple everyday practices as well as professional complementary health services and available in this area to guide responsible health engagement and to optimize health and well-being. Now, if you are a holistic practitioner who would like to give a presentation to these pre-med students, or if you would like to attend their symposium to hear the local speakers describing the complementary therapies available to Baltimore, please contact Emily Graves at egraves4@jhu.edu. That's Emily Graves at egraves4, that's a numerical 4, at jhu.edu. Now, back to our guest, Dan First, Dance of the Moon, celebrating the sacred cycles of the Earth. He'll be in Baltimore down at Breathe Books on November 21st at 1 o'clock and the 22nd at 12 p.m. And, of course, that's in Hamden on the Avenue. He'll be in Frederick Wednesday, Thursday, November the 18th and November, of course, and also at the 10,000 Joys. What a great name. 10,000 Joys. Call 301-6331-JOYS for more information. And in Alexandria on Tuesday, the 24th, at Sacred Circle Books. Call 703-299-9309. Now, as an astrologer, you've written a lot about the extraordinary series of new moons from April 2009 through May 2010. Tell us more about this.
Okay, Bob, what this involves, and hey, in passing, congratulations on the increasing success of Founding Fathers Secret Societies.
Oh, thank you.
It's a tremendous book, and thank you for the copy of that you gave me 3 years ago when I met you. You see, the importance of these phases not right now, which would more accurately be called, and I think it's probably my mistake in misstating it, not new moons, but dark moons.
Oh, dark moons.
The dark moon is the period in the lunar cycle when the moon is not visible, and this is the point when the sun and the moon are in the same degree of the zodiac, so it's always at the dark moon that a solar eclipse occurs. Right. Whereas at the full moon, the moon and the sun are opposite to each other, and you see the full moon rising in the east as the sun is setting in the west. What is happening now? You see, and this is so extraordinary. If you accept the astrologer's paradigm that somehow the night sky and the arrangement of signs and planets in the sky are like the book of God. They are the book of the book of truth in the sky, and they are doing their best to communicate things to us here on Earth as we evolve in our ability to see them. Is that now, after a period in which so much of our attention has gone to the sun and to the planets, that the moon herself is very much getting into the act at this point and doing very active and specific communications. You see, what is happening now for the period from the entire period of 14 months from April of this year until May of next year is that every single month what is happening is that the full moon is a time when the sun and the moon, the two main players in this alignment, are not really connected very much with the energies of other planets, but it is at the dark moon that these incredible combinations of planetary energies are occurring. I mean, one good example, you see, is that in the full moon that came and went on November the 2nd, two other planets, Mars and Mercury, were connected with the Sun-Moon combination. At the next full moon, the one coming on December the 2nd, You have no other planets connected with the Sun-Moon combination at all. But at the dark moon that is coming tonight, and this is typical of what is happening throughout this entire sequence of 14 months of dark moons, there are four other planets plus the two nodes of the moon, which are very strongly angled in relationship to the Sun-Moon pair itself. And so what this implies to me as an astrologer is that the moon herself is saying, use the dark moon. Notice the dark moon. Notice her importance now for the purpose of forming your intentions individually and collectively, of running your ceremonies of intention for the kind of society, the kind of planet that you intend to create now at a time when it is so vitally important for us to be doing this. Because, you see, what is really so important now is that the year of 2012, which is the one that everyone is talking about, is not really the main transformational event. 2012, is the period of reconstruction. It's the period of rebuilding after we have seen the collapse of these hopelessly corrupt structures that are passing away now. The critical time is not 2012, it's next year. It's in the summer of 2010. That is from the period of the June solstice in 2010 for almost 2 months after that until just after the middle of August 2010, next year, when all of these planets representing institutions of politics, government, economy, finance, electronic communications, computer technologies, religious organizations, military affairs are all aligned in tremendously explosive and difficult relationships that have them working against each other, shaking one another apart, so that this is the time when the house of cards really begins to fall. And so therefore, what we are being invited to do by the moon herself at this time is to use the energies of every single one of these dark moons that are coming now tonight on November the 15th and in every month after this. And other things that are very relevant here, you see, Bob, is that are that in December and January and February, on each one of these dark moons in those months, there is what is called a supermoon. That means the moon is at her point of perigee, coming as close in her cycle as she possibly can to the position of the Earth herself, so that the moon's influence is strongest in terms of assisting our ability to intend and to vision and to create imaginatively what we want. Another very interesting element here, which I expect to be seeing in the spring of this year, as we saw last year, is that in the crop circles that appeared in May and June of 2009, there were all of these incredible crescent moon, new moon figures in one crop circle after another. And I would expect the same thing to be happening as well in the spring of this year.
Well, we are expecting right now to say goodbye because our time is up, unfortunately, Dan First. Thank you for joining us again. Friends, the book is Dance of the Moon, Celebrating the Sacred Cycles of the Earth, published by Llewellyn. Dan is going to be in Baltimore on the 21st and 22nd of November at Breathe Books. He will also be, and that's in Hamden on the Avenue, he will also be in Frederick on November 18th and 19th at 10,000 Joys, and in Alexandria on the 24th at Sacred Circle Books. See you next week on 21st Century Radio.